Ryan Smith joins us. Smitty, how you doing?
I'm well. Struds, how are you? Oh, Greg's. It's Greg.
Yeah. No.
We're both good.
Yeah, our voices are a little bit different.
Yeah, mine's a lot deeper. Different.
I'm a little bit better looking, too. So.
Oh, jeez.
So, hey, we're focusing on 97, which, of course, was quite the series for the Oilers. We've had lots of coaches and players on. Everybody has different perspectives and things that they remember about it. But give me your thoughts on, you were a young guy. That was your first time, like most of your teammates, in the playoffs ever at the NHL for you was in 1997. You had come off. You had scored 39 goals that year. I think in the regular season was good, but the playoffs were a totally different animal. And what was your reaction when Ron Lowe sat down and said, "Okay, guys, our game plan is we want to get 100 hits a game." He didn't say anything else. He told us. He goes, "That was basically our game plan: get 100 hits." How'd you approach that?
Well, I think I'll start it back even leading up to playoffs, because we were playing playoff hockey for quite some time, trying to make it in. I think we squeaked in with the second or third last game of the season that we got in. So at that point, we were playing good hockey. But when low tide came in the locker room, we were in Dallas and he started, "Guys, this is our game plan. If we get hits, if you're out there every second shift, you're giving a hit. We're going to get this in the long run, because we're going to wear them down and break them down." And sure enough, that's what ended up happening the whole series. But don't lay off Mike McDaniel. Don't lay off Nieuwendyk. I think he was there at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you just had to be on top of these guys, left, right, and center, and sure enough, we grinded them down, and it took all the way to seven, but it was a lot of fun.
Smitty, was there a turning point in one of the games where you started to feel that physical approach was really starting to take its toll on the Stars?
Yeah, I was just trying to draw back on it. I think it was more so the third or fourth game. Mm-hmm. Where it could go either way in the series, and I really felt that's where it started to be like, all right, we got a chance here, and at that point you're drained, physically and mentally drained, but you're just finding like, all right, we got a notch on them. This is one little extra thing that we can hold in our hats here. Let's keep grinding them out. So I'm thinking right around that third, fourth game mark where we just started to, all right, we got a little bit of an advantage here.
Ryan Smith joins us. You seem to have almost every shift against Darian Hatcher. And, he was a pretty physical player, no doubt. How did you ever not snap and retaliate against the physical punishment?
I like how Shreddy just laughed there,
Well, because that guy was a hand. I mean, you were not a lot of fun to play against. You're relentless. You and Chris Drury are a lot the same. You guys would just keep coming in front of them, no matter what someone did to you, wouldn't stop. So I imagine Darian Hatcher was maybe as frustrated as you were getting.
Yeah, it was him and Matt Mavichuk. And both of them, it was painful every time, every shift you go out there, and you knew that you were getting a cross check against the back or the back of the legs or a rub in the face. And I don't know why I didn't snap. Honestly, there was times I look back at some of the footage of it, and it's like, how did I not? And it takes a lot for me to overcome and finally kick. But to me, I was useless in the penalty box, so that's what I felt.
You talk about Matrick and Hatcher and how they were. I mean, I've seen them play a long time. They should have been in jail for some of the things they did. But, the mindset you have to have has to be one of just pure determination, knowing that that's what's going to happen. But if you do that, you might have a lot of success, which you guys did in the end.
Yeah, I mean, you're never bigger than your team. You don't want to put yourself in front of the team. And I liked that early on in junior and then obviously early on with the Oilers there. And I know this is early in my career, but it, to me, it was a sense of you just put up and shut up and do as best you can for the team. And, you know, obviously we have found a way to prevail in this series, knowing that we were the underdog, and we just chipped away, and we had a great coaching staff that that dissected every game for us, and we had great leaders in that locker room.
Ryan Smith joins us as we discuss the 1997 Oilers-Dallas Stars Game 7. So you guys lose Game 1. It was close. Then you blanked them 4-0 in Game 2. You had a goal and assist in that game. Then you come back for Game 3. Ryan, that was your first home game experience. Ron Lowe told us last week he thought maybe the young guys were almost, you know, got caught up too much in just how loud the building was, because for the first 55 minutes of Game 3, you weren't very good. You were down 3-0, and then you had the miraculous comeback, three goals and a .156. Do you remember the building, and was it, did it have almost, you know, that strange negative effect on you guys because it was so loud and so amped up?
Yeah, I remember the building. It was half empty. A lot of people had left. They just didn't have faith in us. But the true people that were sitting in their seats waiting for us to do something, and we found a way. I mean, it was a barn burner for sure of a game. And when you find ways to come out on top on games like that, where you find a way to chip yourself back into that hockey game, and it was ecstatic. The building was erupted for those that stayed around, and it was a lot of fun to be a part of.
Yeah, how much was that the tie turner? I mean, to come back like that, and I remember my parents started the game, and they said people are running back from the parking lot. I mean, is that where people started to believe in you guys? You know, and maybe you believed in yourselves as well.
Absolutely, I think that, like I said, the third game. You know, getting a feel at back at home, this, all right, we're in this, we're a part of this. And then, you know, obviously, the turning point, believing and coming out with a sense of we're not the eighth seed. We're even with these guys. We're doing our best to throw the underdog card out there, but we're just going out and playing. And, it was awesome.
You guys were in overtime three times that series. You won all three of them in overtime, which is obviously a huge reason why you won the series. Curtis Joseph was unreal in net, but it was the goals that you got in overtime. Like, Kelly Buckberger was not a big prolific goal scorer. Todd Marchand joked, like, he goes, "Man, I might have had 60 breakaways, and that was the only one I scored on." But you know, you had guys that maybe weren't expected to score, and you go back to like Kelly Buckberger. You know, he was playing a top six role that year. There was yourself and Arnott and Doug Waite and Kovalenko and Marchand. Those are your top two lines. Like, it was, but he was on the ice with Mike Greer when they scored that shift. Yeah. Kind of take me back to the overtime. Like, what happens in the room after Kelly Buckberger, of all people, scores the game three OT winner?
Well, I think that's a huge lift. Obviously, he would put his face in front of any puck. You know, obviously killing penalties, but for when a guy like that steps up and finds a way to score, it was, it just lifts your locker room. It's a sense of finally seeing guys that don't get rewarded, get rewarded. And, it was a huge lift in our locker room, and it was a sense of, like we talked about, the belief, you know, and I will say, Bucky, he did earn, you know, playing in the top six, the latter half of that year. You know, he was a guy that was killing penalties. He didn't get on the power play, and he knew his role, but he deserved to be in the top six that time. And, you know, it was instrumental for our whole team.
Joined by Ryan Smith, talking about the Stars Oilers playoff battle of 1997. You know, Smitty, when you talk about the physicality, and I think there's one guy that you probably want to slow down with, Sergei Zubov. How did he influence the series, and how did you see the physicality, if any, working on him?
Yeah, he's not an overly big guy, but he's very crafty. And a guy that you go to try to hit, and he's tough to hit. But that was part of Ron Lowe's game plan for us to, every chance he gets that puck, you've got to get a body through him. You've got to find a way to step into him. And, you know, I do believe that did finally wear him down, because he is an elite defenseman, and or was an elite defenseman. He was instrumental in them winning. I don't can't remember what year it was. I think it was 99. Yeah. And obviously with the Rangers in 94. But a guy that can log a lot of minutes, but wasn't very physically big. So I think we did get to him over time.
So you won game three, then you lost game four. You get to back to Dallas for game five, and it's just a slobber knocker in game five. There's no goals. It's 0-0 after 20, 40, 60, and then 80 minutes. And you guys were a young team. You know, a lot of guys told me we didn't think fatigue was a factor. But how bad was the ice in Dallas for game five, Smitty? Do you remember?
It was terrible. It was awful. Yeah, it's probably one of the worst that I can recall. I do remember, you bring up young guys. I do remember, I think that was a big factor for us is, you know, we had some injuries, but we had guys filling in. I believe Joe Hulbig, Steve Kelly filled in. Those were instrumental for us too. That give us some life. Anytime you can get, guys given minutes, to, you know, wear teams down, hitting guys, as that was our game plan going into it. So I got to give credit to those guys that really flew under the radar for a while and gave us some momentum throughout games.
So we get to double overtime. You start the overtime period. It's, you know, you played 80 minutes, and you score 22 seconds into OT from basically the goal line in the corner, right? How shocked were you when that puck went in?
Well, it was fresh ice, as we talked about. We got some fresh ice. Yeah, it was a squeaker, for sure. I just threw it at the net. And anytime, you know, anytime you're in playoffs and overtime, you throw things at the net, throw garbage at it, and you never know whether it's a rebound or squeaks in. And obviously mine squeaked in for sure. It wasn't the highlight reel that you talk about, but we found a way, and we just grinded it out. And there's no question your goalie has to be your best player throughout the series. And in that specific game, he was. It was back and forth hockey. They had some great scoring chances as well as we did. And we just got lucky and found a way in.
Smitty, some of your former teammates texted me and said that's one of the hardest shots you ever took. How do you feel about that comment?
That's probably true. Hey, they don't say how. They tell me.
But also, when I think of your goals, like, you're right. I mean, that's not one maybe they're going to put on a poster, but that's like a Ryan Smith goal. You know, that to me is one that I like. You just found a way to get it in there, and I you know, I say that in a real complimentary way. You did it almost 400 times in your career, so it's a pretty impressive way of finding a way to score goals, maybe out of not a lot at times.
Yeah, I don't know if it was my stick curve or what. I don't know if the wooden stick still was a factor, but It honestly just, it found a way, and I don't know if it was from the goal line. I think it was a little bit higher around the circle area, but it found a way.
Ryan Smith joins us. So I don't know if I've asked anyone. So you score that overtime winner. What's the reaction right after in that locker room, and how different, if any, was it from the Game 5 OT winner to the Game 3 OT winner?
Well, obviously scoring in Dallas, and obviously quick celebration on the ice. I mean, you can hear us, but and the four or five fans that came down from Edmonton that threw the stakes out. But I mean, it was a sense of belief again, and we didn't ride our highs too high and our lows too low. We stayed pretty even keel for the most part, but we were a tight knit group.
I believe our leaders really did a great job of holding us all accountable for that. Dougie Waite, Billy Guerin, Bucky, I think Luke Richardson was there too. And, you know, these were instrumental guys that, you know, learned a lot from the players before them and that they played with. And they just passed it down to us young guys because we've talked about there's a lot of young guys in that locker room. And we just grew together and learned.
Smitty, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the forwards in that group, but you know, you touched on a couple of them. But guys, maybe talk a little bit about how like Boris Mironov and Luke Richardson and Dan McGillis, even Brian Marchand. I don't think he played a lot in the playoffs because of an injury. But you know, some of your D-men, they were pretty just solid guys and solid D-men, were they not?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of flash in them. They were simple. As Craig McTavish would use, you can make $3 million just dumping it off the glass and letting the guys go skate into it for the D-man nowadays. But, you know, simple. Guys were simple back there. First good pass, and, you know, that's all we really needed. I mean, we had a good group of forwards that, you know, that believed in ourselves for one, but believed in each other.
Brian Smith joins us. You come back to Edmonton, Smitty. It was kind of unique how this really became like, you know, Dallas won game one, you won game three at home, but after that, the road team always won. So you come back to Edmonton, but you have a chance to close out the series. You know, it was a close game. Yeah, you didn't get the result. Now you're back again to Dallas, you know, and back in 97, it's not like, you know, the travels and how you traveled even in 97 was a lot different than how you're traveling later in your career. I think that's safe to say. So that part's a little taxing. You get into Dallas and just talk about that game itself, not just the overtime, but leading up to it and the Medano save that Joseph made late in the second period might have been just as big as the one he made on Neuendijk in overtime.
Yeah, and I think you touched on in regards to Game 6, we knew it wasn't going to be an easy task. And we didn't have it in the bag. We believed in ourselves, but we knew that they were number one seed for a reason. And, you know, they obviously showed that in Game 6. And then coming down to Game 7, it was like, all right, we're still in it. We still got ourselves a chance here to you know, knocked these guys off, and we went out and played hard. And yeah, like I said before, Cujo was the best. He stood on his head, and you're right, Medano save and the Neuendijk save, but you know, the one in the second period just gave us some momentum and allowed us to not fall that far behind and allow us to be engaged in. And obviously, the rest is history with Tadi Marchand's speed down the wing and firing it home. But Cujo just, I can't say enough about the guy and how he played throughout that series.
What's he like in between games, before games? Because he had such a huge impact on that series. I just can't imagine what he would be like knowing the impact he had to have on that series for you guys to win.
Well, you know, goalies are all weird.
Fair point.
He was even keel. He's so soft spoken. He didn't. Anytime he made a great save, he was very humble about it. He's a humble person, a person that came to the rink, worked hard in practices, and bettered himself in those situations for the games and. When he was in between periods, he's didn't say a whole lot, but when he did, you knew that he had our back and he was going to do everything he could to keep that puck from going in the net.
You were on the bench, or were you on the ice when he stoned Neuendijk?
I was on the bench, and it was unbelievable. I had to look around. I think one of the linesmen was right there, and I looked around, and I was like, oh, my gosh, it's an open net. Neuendijk's got it. And sure enough, his glove's coming around, and I just saw it, and it was like, you got to be kidding me. And I believe it was the next shift.
Yeah,
I think it was 4-on-4.
that shift, and it came down, and Dougie chipped it out into a soft area for Toddy to skate into, and sure enough, he just down the wing and fired it low blocker over Andy Moog. And I just remember embracing low tide, and actually Kevin Lowe was on the bench because he was still dressing, but he wasn't playing that much, I don't think, in that series. But it was something else. It still brings chills.
Well, you know what's interesting about the Cujo save, because it was miraculous, and you're in a moment because it's a huge game. Like, were you guys all talking to each other, like, did you see that, or do you not have time to even do that because you got to focus on the next shift?
Well, being we live in Canada, you're magnified for sure, but they didn't televise it too much down there as far as replaying it, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess
we
not.
Saw it. So, we saw it, but everything else after that is magnified. And I think you're in the moment, Greg. You're really in the moment, so you're not, watching like it is now. I mean, today they'll replay four or five times before they drop the next puck. So
yeah,
It was. I think it was replayed once or twice. Quickly, but we were back in it, ready to go. We made the save, and sure enough. But I think more so after the game, I think we were in the locker room. We replayed it.
Oh, I was just going to ask you that. You guys must have. I could just imagine replaying that for all the guys to see the Joseph and then Todd Marchand, because like the Joseph save was unreal, but even like Todd Marchand to score in a breakaway, like that didn't happen very often. Right? Like he was, he's a great player. So both of those plays back to back. Like I could just imagine the room being quiet and the video guy comes in, they play the Cujo save and you guys just going absolute bananas in the room when that save was made.
Yeah, we sure did. And I mean, I think it was Brian Ross at the time that, came out and showed us all, not only that save, but the Modano save. And then obviously, like you talked about, and Marchand would actually, Toddy would say this, my hands couldn't catch up to my feet at times, and sure enough, he buried it, so it was great.
Now I can't remember, because the team split. Half the guys went to congratulate Joseph, and the other half went to congratulate Marchand. Which way did you go?
I went towards Marchand, I think. I was actually mixed. I went both. I went one way, and then the other, and then I finished, because I was with Todd, over closer to Toddy, because he came towards that bench.
Yes.
Yeah. It was towards the bench that had happened, so.
Did Ronnie Lowe push out of the way to get onto the ice first?
Yeah, him and his cigar.
That's why he didn't blow a hamstring. He got off there quick for an old man.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I do remember just all of us eventually bracing once Cujo made his way down and Toddy made his way down to each other. It was a phenomenal feeling.
Yeah, because that was the first time for when we had Kevin Lowe on. He'd obviously won Stanley Cups, and he was playing with a broken foot. That was like Ron Lowe dressed him just because he wanted his experience for that Game 7, and he didn't play him a whole bunch. But he said watching all those young guys experience that first playoff win, right? Like you won later on. You went to a Stanley Cup final, of course, and you won an Olympics. But kind of that was your first at the pro level real win. If playoffs are real wins, right? Like that. So that's got to probably stand out a little bit more for you.
Yeah, it sure does. And, I think for me personally, I think the lead up, obviously playing with Dougie and scoring 39 that year and feeling confident and then being able to contribute in the playoffs personally, that felt great. But it was just that teamness that allowed us to prevail against a great hockey team.
And then you look ahead, you guys lost in the second round of Colorado, but then the next year, here you are, David Goliath again against Colorado, and in a tougher hole, you were down 3-1 in that series and managed to win three straight. How much did the 97 series help you in 98 to come back, if any?
Well, I think it helps immensely from year to year. I think anytime you get that experience and that
that feeling of playoff atmosphere hockey. You know, that you don't go into it as timid and you know, you're back on your heels. You're set and ready. You're on your toes. You're excited, and you've been through it. And yeah, experience really helps.
Smitty, always good to catch up with you. Hope you and Stacey and the kids, everybody's okay in Nashville. How is it down there?
You know what? It's you know, we're quarantined in our houses just like everybody. But hey, we're getting along great. Doing some work, school work with the kids, and getting outside as much as we can. We got a rainy day today, and we still went out. But we're doing good. Hopefully, you guys are 6 feet apart in the studio there. And, yeah, all the best to you guys and your families, too.
Well, actually, I make Struds wear a full toque now when he comes into my house because we're doing the show from my house now. So he's got like a balaclava with a – oh, and it actually sounds better, so we might keep that on him.
Straighter teeth.
Mm-hmm. Straighter teeth. Is it true, Struds, do you have another baby?
No. No, I got that tap shut off a long time ago. Buddy.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I didn't know. Nope.
Chris Dingman had a baby.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay.
The big guy.
There we go.
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah. You
guy.
Got, yeah, Dingman and Struds. One's won two cups, one hasn't. Yeah. But other than that, it's very good.
Similar players.
It's very.
No knee bending or strides.
Study. That's all right.
Well, Smitty, you know what? Maybe you could go, you could sit down family tonight and maybe recap the 97 series. You should watch some of the. I'm sure you got it on DVD or something somewhere. I'm sure the kids would love it.
Oh, it's I got a top shelf somewhere. I can pull it out, no problem.
Yes, yeah. Laserdisc. He has on Laserdisc.
Smitty, always good to catch up with you, man. Yeah. Stay safe. Hope you and your family, everybody does okay, and we'll see everybody out and about soon.
You betcha. Same to you guys.